to blackmail the Korax.
They blackmailed me. I think it's fair.
Tengger is not interested in fairness. He's interested in winning.
So am I. With that, I rolled away from him, taking a few breaths in hopes of leveling my temper.
Don't turn away. We have to settle this.
It is settled, Simon. You just don't like the answer. He protested that, but I ignored him, determined to either sleep or pretend to. Beside me, I felt his energy stirring like a boiling pot. It would frustrate him to wonder how close he had come to getting the blade, and how far from it he was now. I knew he'd still try to get answers for me, but it wouldn't work. He'd learn nothing about the blade, not until I was ready. With those thoughts swirling in my head, it was a long time before I fell asleep. When I awoke sometime later, he had fallen asleep too. Chapter 38. Kestra. Our driver was no longer singing, but a light rain pelted the canvas. If we were careful, the rainfall would mask any sound of our being in here. I studied Simon, still asleep close beside me. A small scar lined one eyebrow. I'd never noticed that before. When he was awake, there was always a tension in his expression, even when he was smiling. But now, he looked younger, in need of tenderness, rather than another fight. If I were anyone else, I could have been that person for him. I could have shared my heart with him, and together, he and I would have faced whatever the future held. If I were anyone else. That single thought put an ache in the back of my throat. One that threatened to choke me if I couldn't distract myself. Then I remembered the trunk next to me, full of dresses. Perhaps this trunk offered a greater blessing than if it had been filled with coins. I pushed through the dresses until I found one that should fit me, and that was slightly less hideous than the others. It was an off-shoulder pale green gown, with a cream lace corset, one I could tie without help. No beadwork or sash seemed to belong to this gown, but the poor rarely wore those anyway. The dress possibly outdated Antora itself, and there was a tear in one seam of the arm. But who was I to judge? Last night I'd cut off the entire bottom half of my skirts, which now dangled unevenly just below my knees. My overdress was stained with mud, its original color unrecognizable, and I was sure the fabric had picked up any number of odors from the dungeons, a smell I had no desire to remember. I checked again to be sure Simon was asleep, then removed my overdress. Beneath it, the upper half of the shift was intact, and the green dress's long skirt would hide the ruined lower half anyway. I didn't find any cloaks in the trunk, but the sleeves of the dress were long, and I had Simon to help warm me. This dress was an unforgivable offense to fashion, but it was good enough for now. I'd just avoid looking down at it. Forever, if necessary. As soon as I finished, I turned to see Simon lying on the hay with his hands behind his head, staring at me with a smile on his face. I tilted my head, amused by the gleam in his eyes.
You were watching me?
His grin widened, suddenly mischievous.
Only for the last few minutes, unfortunately.
Playfully, I swatted at his shoulder, but he caught my hand and pulled me down to him, face to face. The quiet laughter between us quickly became serious. Time itself seemed to slow. He was staring at me again, but I knew he would not let me go, nor did I want him to. He leaned up on one arm, bringing his body closer to mine. His lips closer to mine. Our noses touched, and his breath was on my cheek, a reminder for me to exhale, if I could. Then his hand was on my waist, and I brushed my fingers across his shoulder. When he drew back again, enough that our eyes met, his gaze burrowed so deep into me that I felt myself letting go of the outside world. Letting go of my past and my worries, and everything that stood between him and me. Letting go of my last secret. No, not that one. But it seemed he was going to try. Keeping his voice low, he said,
I'm going to make a guess. If I'm right, our game continues.
I groaned. No, Simon. His knuckle followed my jawline.
You want us to be closer, but it frightens you.
Fear? No, it was bigger than that. Only 3 nights ago, he had proclaimed his hatred for me. Could that have changed so fast? He was still under oath to the Korax, and sworn to kill anyone in my bloodline. Fear was the smallest description of what I felt. His fingers reached my hair, pushing and twisting through the strands. He moved his thumb to trace across my cheek softly, dizzyingly.
You trust me, and you don't. You believe in my purpose, but not my leader. You believe in me, but...
I do believe in you, Simon. I believe in your heart and your passion. I know who you are, and who you are meant to be, and I believe in you to become that person. But I need you to believe in me, too.
Somehow, for as good as that had sounded in my head, it had been the wrong thing to say.
His tone cooled as he whispered,
"Where is the Olden Blade kiss?"
I pressed my lips together, staring at him just as intently, but making my refusal clear.
"I'm not asking for Tengger's sake or Trina's. This is just between you and me."
"And your oath to the Korax, correct?" His eyes flashed, and the warmth between us frosted. He said,
"If it's the only way to save you, yes, I'll honor my oath. This secret is far too dangerous.
I'll take that risk."
"Not alone, for your own sake. You need my help."
"It's none of your concern what I do."
"Maybe I want it to be my concern. I want you to be my concern."
He cursed and released me entirely, mumbling something beneath his breath. To have been so near him and then so suddenly apart took the air from my lungs. A cruel suffocation. When I could, I whispered, "If you have something to say, then say it." At first he wouldn't look at me, or couldn't bear to. But slowly his eyes met mine, exposing a pain in him that I hadn't seen before, or reflecting something he saw in me. With our eyes locked, his breaths came faster and deeper.
So did mine.
After what seemed like hours, he said,
"You are ripping at my heart, Kes. Every time I reach out and you pull back. Every time you offer a smile to someone who's not me. When you doubt me, or mistrust me, or hide your secrets away. It's like a claw that shreds me from within. When we're together, I forget how to breathe. But when we're apart, I realize you've become my heir. I want you to take a risk, but take it with me. Risk yourself with me."
"Simon, you know who I..."
"I do know. And I'm telling you that I don't care. If you can't cross this bridge between us, or you won't, then tell me now and let me tear you from my soul. But don't hold me in this awful middle place where I can't get closer and I can't get away from you."
His words pierced me. I felt them more than I heard them, like a shiver at my spine or a pounding in my chest. When he went silent, all I could think was that my next move would change everything. I touched a stray lock of his hair, folding it back into place, then slid a finger down the side of his face. My eyes met his again, communicating what I wanted. Immediately, his hands reached for me, wrapping around my back and pulling me to him, bringing his lips to mine. This wasn't the cautious, still moment such as Basil had offered in his embrace. This first kiss with Simon was like a wave, compelled to reach land, each brush of his lips tumbling into the next, asking for more. His kiss ignited emotions in me I'd never known could exist. Thoughts emptied from my mind until all that remained was the feel of his lips, the press of his hands, and the beat of my heart, pulsing for him, aching for more of him. I held on to each second as if nothing so perfect could possibly continue. But then there was another kiss, another rise in the flood of my emotions, another surrender to him. With every touch, I belonged more to him, and him to me. Our growing passion communicated everything he wanted. A land free of Endric's rule, a place of peace where nothing existed but him and me. and a future for the two of us, together. He wanted that, and he believed getting the Oldenblade into the right hands was the way to achieve it. As I came toward him for another kiss, I realized that was all I wanted, too. It was, until it wasn't. Until I remembered Darrow, and what would be necessary to gain his freedom. Until I remembered that there would have to come a time when Simon went one way, and I went the other. Until this moment had to end, far sooner than I wanted. It took all my strength to force myself away from him. And when I did, he sat up as well, sensing that something was wrong.
Kes?
I shook my head. If it were only my life at stake, then I would take the risk. But I will not obligate you to the same. That's not fair. Simon took my hand in his.
Your life is in danger, more than ever before.
If you'd tell me where the Oldenblade is? My tone sharpened. Is that why you kissed me? To weaken my defenses?
I kissed you because I'm falling so fast for you that I expect at any second to crash into a reality where you're not here. And you won't be. If you won't tell me where the dagger is, this secret could get you killed.
This secret is my only chance to live. Silence collapsed the world between us. Our own pit of eternal consequence where we might fall forever. I wanted to believe him, just as I wanted to believe in him, and that somewhere ahead was a tomorrow that belonged only to the two of us. But we had gotten too close to the edge. I could not give away this secret, and he would not give in until he had what he wanted. Our story was never going to end any other way. I scooted back against the side of the wagon, waiting for him to say something, and knowing he wouldn't. Because nothing he'd say could fix this. A pit had opened inside me, one that I doubted would ever be filled again. So this was what it felt like, when a heart shattered.
Chapter 39. Simon. If Tengger knew I'd kissed her, if he knew I'd kissed her like that, I'd be expelled from the Korax. Tengger would say there was no way I could have such strong feelings for Kestra and still be loyal to his orders. Maybe that was true. Further complicating things was the way our kiss had ended. Kestra was at the far side of the wagon now, staring at me as if I should have some brilliant solution to the hundreds of problems she had created. Maybe if I understood a fraction of the way her brain worked, I'd know what to say. Why did she have to complicate everything? Why did she have to be so complicated? A jumble of lines that intersected and diverged and encircled each other, with no discernible reason. She obviously felt confused, and I couldn't blame her for that. For her, every cubit of Antora had become a landmine. Everyone she met for the rest of her life would be treated with suspicion, because they all had a good reason to seek her out. So did I, but for very different reasons. Kestra had become like fire to me. I needed her. I was drawn to her, but being this close was burning me. This must be why Gerald had warned me not to fall in love with her. But I doubted I had any choice. Not anymore. Why did it have to be this way? Couldn't I love her and remain dedicated to the Korax? Couldn't Kestra become part of the search for the Infidant? No, not part of the search. Kestra had claimed that responsibility solely for herself. No one else knew where the Oldenblade was, a fact more dangerous than her bloodline. Surely she knew that the future of our entire country was at stake. Why was she doing this? Suddenly, I began to understand that jumble of lines intersecting and twisting within her. I couldn't stretch them out straight enough to answer any of these knotted questions. I didn't even know where to start. Across the wagon, Kestra still hadn't said a word. Finally, I whispered, "Talk to me, please." Before she could speak, the wagon halted. I lifted a finger, warning her to remain silent. Then I listened, hoping to pick up any clue as to where we were or why we had stopped so abruptly. It was probably nothing. Maybe the driver had simply arrived at his destination or was taking a break to stretch his legs. But it was strangely quiet outside, and my instincts warned me to be careful. I parted the back flap of the canvas to look out. but as soon as my hand was spotted, someone grabbed it and yanked me from the wagon, over the backboard, and dropped me on the ground like a hot coal. Before I could warn Kestra to run, someone introduced his boot to my ribs, a younger man. At least it wasn't a Dominion soldier's iron-toed boot. The older man who had been the driver snarled,
"Stowing away in my wagon, you thief! You better hope there's something in here to pay me for the ride!"
He put a boot on my chest, then bent down and pulled the satchel from my shoulder. I shook my head, "Don't!" But the boot punched down on me again. The driver stuck his finger through Gar's ring that had been in the bottom of the satchel and showed it to his companion.
"Look at what I've found! This should fetch a fine price at market."
"Remove that from your finger or I will cut it off," Kestra yelled as she jumped from the wagon, holding my sword. The younger man chuckled as he swaggered toward her.
"Aren't you a pretty thing? Be careful or you might hurt yourself."
Her grin darkened. "It won't be me who gets hurt." She lifted the sword with a confidence that would unnerve the bravest warrior and charged over to the man. The tip of it must have connected somewhere, because a second later, I heard him stifle a cry. "That's a scratch." Kestra nodded at the driver, who had almost frozen in place since she emerged. "You'll get worse if you don't put that ring back inside the satchel and return it to my friend. Now!" Instead of cooperating, the driver put his boot back on my chest. I didn't know why he bothered. They'd already done enough damage there.
"I've seen your face before," the driver said. "On my tablet, I think."
Kestra didn't blink. "That girl you saw on the tablet doesn't exist, but I do, and my sword is just as real. Let him go."
"Thieves and stowaways," he continued. "The rot of Antora! One day the Dominion will punish you all."
"As they'll punish you for singing?" Kestra asked. "If you were going to break the law, I wish at least you'd have stayed in tune." Surprisingly, the driver chuckled.
"A fair complaint, I suppose. Let's not fight here. You're far too pretty an opponent. Pay for the ride, and we'll both be on our way."
"We're not thieves, and the Dominion is the rot, not the solution to it." Kestra lowered my sword. "Return his ring, and I will pay you for our travels with this." I knew what it was. The ruby necklace from her mother, Lily. I mumbled, "No," but I doubted that anyone heard me.
"Agreed."
I heard the ring drop, and then the satchel drop beside me. I clutched the handle, dragging it close to my side. Kestra immediately handed over her necklace, and the boot was removed from my chest. She added, "In exchange for that necklace, you both must promise not to tell anyone you've seen us here." The men gave a half-hearted agreement that they'd probably break after calculating what the Dominion would pay for the whereabouts of the girl on their tablet. I rolled to my least injured side while both men returned to their wagon and drove on. Once they were gone, Kestra knelt beside me. "Healing pools are not as common as you seem to think, the way you go around getting yourself kicked. Nor are physicians common enough for you to go around stabbing everyone who crosses you." She smiled. "Remember that. Next time you think of crossing me? Are you all right?" "I'm fine. It just knocked the wind out of me." "Yes, and probably took a few of your ribs with it." "They had, but I hoped she wouldn't notice my grimace as I stood again." She returned my sword, but exchanged it for possession of my knife. Once we began walking again, I said, "That necklace belonged to your mother. The ring belonged to your adopted father. And I can't repay you for protecting it." "Thank you." I took her hand, grateful for a moment of peace between us. Maybe one of our last peaceful moments. Her thoughts were already looking ahead. "Those men will report us, despite their agreement." "Then let's get as far as possible before they do." "Do you know where we are?" she asked. Trees were scant here, and the grass was brittle and sparse. The salty sea wind that blew inland left much of this land too arid for farming. "We're not far from Sylvan," I said. "At our current pace, it'd be several hours' walk." I wondered if Tengger was already there.
"Sylvan?" Kestra stopped and groaned. "Why didn't I think of this before? Celia used to come to Sylvan to shop. She claimed that Sylvan had better markets than Grimlow, which was closer to the fields. She lied to me." "It was the truth, in a way. but she came to the markets to sell, not to buy. She sold me! Kestra clicked her tongue in disgust. I hope I went for a good price. I didn't know Celia's price for betrayal, only that the Korax would have paid almost anything for it. And I had no doubt Kestra would find out the full story before she let the matter rest. A few miles later, I finally spotted the first homes on the outskirts of the city. Farm homes. Maybe someone inside would give us a ride into town, and perhaps have a bandage for my ribs. Where do the Korax hide here? She asked. We don't hide. That'd be too obvious. We don't appear different from other Antorans, and we don't act different. At least, not in the open. If you could look at me and identify me as a Korak, then I've made a mistake. Then where do we go after we get to Sylvan? First, we find somewhere safe for you until I can get Darrow freed. Her eyes moistened, and she stopped walking long enough to release a slow breath. You're still going to help me, after knowing my secrets? It's because I know your secrets. I sighed, dreading the next few hours. With what I now knew, we shouldn't have come to Sylvan. Kestra couldn't possibly be prepared to meet Tengger, to stare him in the face and lie about a fake dagger. If the burden fell to me, would I lie to my own captain, a man I was dedicated to serving? An idea suddenly lit inside my head. The solution to the one question she would not answer. It was equal parts dangerous and cautious, reckless and logical. Kestra wouldn't do things any other way. I said, I think I know where the Olden Blade is. She released my hand and took a step back, her breaths suddenly coming in bursts. You don't know. You're guessing, hoping I'll give the secret away. As we were leaving the dungeons, Gerald wanted to stay with you, but you ordered him to leave.
Yes.
To save his life. Or was it to save something else? Gerald had not spent 2 decades as a spy at Woodcourt, waiting for Kestra to come of age only to leave at her first request. I think Gerald took 2 daggers into those dungeons. The first was the fake one he planted in the pit. But he also has the second dagger, the real one. On your orders, he escaped with it right under Tengger's nose. By then, she was calmer. Although she had become silent, her eyes darting around as if searching for a way to convince me that I was wrong. When she failed to come up with a plausible excuse, she merely shrugged and said, If that was my plan, then admit it's a good one. The blade belongs to the Haldarians and no one else. You think that'll be good enough for Tengger? You think he'll laugh this off? What a good joke you've played on the Korax and now all is forgiven? You have no idea how badly you've complicated things. I had to complicate things. Tengger is dangerous. You are every bit as dangerous. If he is manipulating who the Infidant becomes, then so are you. The dagger is ransom for the life of my friend. Do not equate my actions with his. What of Gerald's life? Don't you respect the danger he is in? Her voice became flat. Do not lecture me on danger. I know exactly what I've done, and I'd do it again. I cursed and started in with a retort, but heard a sound in the distance. Horses. I squinted in that direction, hoping it was anyone but Dominion soldiers. It probably wasn't them. They preferred the faster Ouropods. I then hoped it was anyone but Tengger. Whoever was coming, my third hope was that Kestra wouldn't be careless enough to speak her Dalasor name. Sylvan wasn't exactly bursting with a Dominion-loving population. They're looking for us, Kestra mumbled. Should we hide? Around us, gorse and heather fluttered in the evening breeze, along with vast patches of Korak weeds. A mouse would have trouble hiding here. Someone on horseback shouted, a voice I recognized. Do you know him? Kestra asked. Gabe Willen, I mumbled. He was a year older than me, tall and muscular with coal-black hair that he kept tied back at the nape of his neck. All the girls had eyes for him, and he knew it. He was also my friend. I raised a welcoming hand and kept my tone casual. It's just me. Gabe sauntered closer, his eyes settling on Kestra far too long before shifting my way. A smile widened across his face, and he slid off his horse. Simon Hatch, what stampede ran over you? The other guy looks worse. He laughed when I said it. That was a good sign. I heard you were part of some secret plan. Was she part of that plan? Gabe's eyes returned to Kestra. With a flirtatious smile, I'd knock off his face once my ribs were healed. Who's this? A friend? I said. Why are you out here?
A wagon driver pulled into town an hour ago, trying to sell a ruby necklace he claimed had been given to him by a couple of young people stowing aboard his wagon. Tenger ordered us to investigate.
Tenger's here?
Gabe motioned vaguely behind him. Back there, on one of the other horses. We brought a cart, because that driver also mentioned someone was injured. You, obviously. Gabe put an arm around me, failing to notice my grunt of pain when he did. Tenger thinks you're dead. We even made a toast to your loss last night. Guess I'll have to take back all those nice things, I said.
I tilted my head toward Kestra. If I'm still alive, then it's thanks to her. Listen, I need a place for her to stay. I'll wait here for Tenger.
You're hiding her? Gabe released me and let out a low whistle. Things just got more interesting. Does she have a name?
Not yet. Gabe circled Kestra, taking her in. He didn't seem to recognize her, and nothing in her appearance would give her away. Her dress was beneath what the poorest girls of Antora would wear. Her hair had been combed out with her fingers. It fell loose over her shoulders, which a Dalasaur would have considered unacceptable. She also had my knife again, and was holding it in a tight grip. But if Gabe knew any details of the mission, it wouldn't take him long to guess at who she was.
I won't defy the captain, Gabe said. Sorry, Simon, not even for you.
I'm not asking you to defy him. I shuffled forward, aware of the bruising on my ribs. I'm only asking for time to talk to him. Please, Gabe. He smiled at her again.
Is her name Alice? She looks like an Alice.
Call her whatever you'd like, just help me. Gabe hesitated, and Kestra groaned, losing her patience. He won't help. I'll find some place to go on my own. All I want is the item I came for. After that, I'll leave. Tell Tenger that.
Tell him yourselves, Gabe said, as Tenger's horse approached along with three other riders and one cart.
Trina was on the captain's right flank, and the cart was pulled by the man Kestra had stabbed that first night, Pell. His glare was murderous, but it was nothing compared to Tenger's icy expression. In response, Kestra's knife twisted in her hand, ready for action. Tenger's eyes barely brushed over me before they settled heavily on Kestra.
Take her, he ordered his men. Our business with this girl is not finished.
Chapter 40 Kestra. I had thought I was prepared to face Captain Tenger, but something in the set of his jaw stopped my heart. My grip glove was on his right hand, which deepened the pit in my stomach. Beside me, Simon went tense, too. He shouldn't have. Not if he still considered himself a Korak. Did he? I tried reading Simon's stony expression, but failed. He wasn't giving up any secrets here. Neither would I. Tenger's men jumped off their horses with disc bows in hand. Some of the discs they held were far more dangerous than the Silvers, and illegal for anyone but Dominion soldiers. Simon probably wouldn't draw his sword against other Koraks, but I had a knife and a simpler morality about using it. If they started a fight, I would finish it.
She came here to talk with you, Simon called. Not to be attacked.
What attack? Trina asked, still on her horse beside Tenger and wearing her usual charming glare.
We just want to talk without her waving a knife at us.
Drop it, Kestra.
Kestra? Dalasaur?
Gabe turned to Simon.
You brought a Dalasaur here? Are you insane?
Maybe he was. Or from everyone's reactions, I was beginning to wonder if I was the one who'd gone mad. Tenger's smug posture only irritated me further.
You left Simon for dead.
I raised the knife, mostly in defiance of Trina.
I saved him. I also gave you the Olden Blade, as we agreed. In exchange, I want my servants back.
Yes. You want Celia and Darrow.
Tenger looked around him with an amused expression.
Did we bury your driver yet? I can't remember.
Is Darrow alive?
I knew how desperate I sounded, and that giving away my emotions weakened my leverage to negotiate. But I was desperate, and could never pretend otherwise.
Is he?
Barely.
Tanger became serious again.
I doubt he's well enough to travel. Perhaps we can find you a comfortable place to stay until he gets better.
A comfortable place to stay? Was it comfortable behind Korak bars? Because I suspected that's what Tanger had in mind. Keeping the knife where everyone could see it, I said, "Provide me with a wagon, and Darrow and I will leave tonight." Tanger clicked his tongue.
What a pity. I'm afraid we've recently run out of wagons. But if you'll talk with me, answer my questions, then by the time we're finished, I may be able to locate something with wheels. Perhaps also some food and blankets for your journey. Home.
That last word was meant to injure. Home was no longer an option for me, and he knew it. Let me speak to Darrow, I said. After that, you and I can talk. It's that simple. That simple? Trina raised a brow. We don't trust you.
But you do trust me.
Simon shuffled forward.
I promise I will not let Kestra do any harm to the Korax.
It was a carefully worded phrase. He hadn't promised to tell them who I really was, or even that he and I had become something more than whatever we had been a few days ago. Simon had only made the promise he knew he could keep, because I wasn't here to hurt the Korax, or to add to my list of enemies. But I wouldn't leave without Darrow.
You owe me this, Simon said to Tanger. For what I sacrificed in the dungeons, you owe me your trust. I've proven my loyalty. Yes. But is that loyalty to us or to her?
Tanger gave a grim smile.
All right. Let's get these two back to Sylvan as quietly as possible.
He rode closer to me.
How should we address you now? I gather you've abandoned the reason to be called my lady.
I'd be happiest if you don't address me at all. Take me to Darrow.
We'll talk first, over supper, he said. If I like your answers, then we'll try to locate your man.
Darrow first, I started to say, but Simon put a hand on my arm.
Let him win this one, he whispered. You have bigger battles ahead.
Tanger cocked his head, enjoying his small victory.
Besides, I'm sure you're both hungry.
Neither of us had eaten in over a day. I wanted to see Darrow, but I also liked the idea of getting some food first. Maybe I could let him win this one.
Give me that knife,
Tanger said.
It wouldn't be a polite conversation otherwise.
It wasn't a request. When I handed it over, he cocked his head toward his riders.
Get Simon onto the cart and check his injuries. Gabe, you'll escort our guest.
No. I reached for Simon's arm, but he had stepped farther away from me. I'll ride on the cart with Simon.
If you do, you'll draw attention to us both.
Simon barely met my eyes.
Go with Gabe. I'll see you in Sylvan.
It felt like he was pushing me away, now that he was with his own people again. Maybe it really was about avoiding attention. Or maybe he would be different now. More like the cold-hearted Simon who had intercepted my carriage 3 nights ago. Another battle lost. Reminding myself again that I was here for Darrow and nothing more, I followed Gabe to his horse. He helped me up first and saddled in behind me, closer than I liked. I had hoped we would travel into town near Simon's cart, but Gabe took us on a wider route, away from the others.
Kestra Dalasor.
Gabe said my name slowly, savoring each syllable as if it were a dessert he wished to devour.
No wonder Simon didn't want me to know who you are. If I breathe the Dalasor name in the town square, we'll have a mob after you within minutes.
Don't breathe in the town square, then.
Spoken with eyes,
Gabe chuckled.
You've got the spirit of a Dalasor.
I'm not a Dalasor. Not anymore. Not ever. Up ahead, Gabe pointed out a small wooden box on the ground, stained nearly to the color of the soil. When I noticed it, I saw a line of them spreading out as wide as I could see.
Proximity alarms,
he explained.
Magnets that detect the iron inside Dominion soldiers' hearts. Any of them cross this line and the magnets will start snapping together, sending a signal into town. I designed them myself.
Do they work?
He chuckled. Well, yes. In theory. You'll be safe here, Miss Not a Dallasaur anymore.
The Dominion soldiers didn't worry me. Tanger did. As we entered Sylvan, I better understood what Simon had meant about the Korax blending in with the population. This was a simple town of wooden buildings and rutted dirt roads. Open shops lined the dirt road, though there weren't many people around. I supposed they were out working. It'd be hard enough just to put supper on the table each night, so it would be easy for them to miss certain oddities about their town, or more likely, to ignore them. I thought of other towns I had passed through in years past. Were they all infested with Korax this way, blending in with the local population until the opportunity came to attack us? To attack them. The Dallasaurs were them to me now, not us.
Hello, Gabe.
A girl from the far end of the street saw him and gave a friendly wave. She must not have recognized me, but I definitely knew her. Celia. Just as I had done once with Simon, I slid off Gabe's horse and began running. Gabe called for me to wait, but he had to secure his horse first, giving me a good lead. At some point, he would realize I also had his knife. As soon as Celia realized that it was me racing toward her, she panicked, looking in every direction for a place to run. Let her try. She could scramble up the side of the nearest building and I would figure out a way to be on top by the time she got there. Once I came within reach of her, Celia raised her hands, dropping the basket of bread she'd been carrying.
Kestra, I'm sorry.
Her eyes were on the knife, though I had yet to raise it.
They forced me.
Forced you to what? Wander freely about this town with enough money to buy a new dress and fresh bread? What torture you must have suffered here.
I didn't want to betray you.
I snorted. And I didn't want to be betrayed. So we still have one thing in common. Gabe had caught up to us now and stood beside us, ready to intervene if a fight broke out. It wasn't necessary. I would never hurt Celia. I only wanted to understand her. And maybe yell a little. Or a lot. Celia sniffed with sadness, which might have been genuine humility, but maybe not. When she had screamed out with pain the night my carriage was attacked, she'd obviously been faking because there wasn't a visible scratch on her, and she had just been openly flirting with Gabe. She could say whatever she wanted. I no longer had any reason to believe her. Still, she was trying.
I'd been coming to the market here in Sylvan for weeks before they figured out who I was. I never spoke your name to them before that. I never sought them out.
So when they asked if you served me, that's when you told them. Tears fell onto Celia's cheeks. Also fake, I assumed.
Do you know why I worked for the Dallasaurus, my lady? My mother was a handmaiden for your mother. She knew things about you, the truth about you, but you never spoke a word of it except to me. After your mother died and my mother was dismissed, I went to the manager of your father's household,
Gerald. Her hand flew to her throat, apparently surprised that I should know him.
Yes, Gerald. I demanded money or else I'd reveal your true history. Instead of paying me, he offered me a choice. Either to be sent to Woodcourt's dungeons or serve you.
The corner of my mouth lifted. What a terrible choice. She missed the sarcasm.
It was, my lady. You have a reputation of being...
charming? Friendly?
Difficult.
Celia's cheeks reddened.
But then I got to know you, the real you, and changed my mind. You can be nice, if no one tries to control you. And you can be fun in a why-are-you-always-risking-my-life sort of way.
She bit down on her lip, almost ashamed to look at me.
But I never forgot who you are, the kind of person you'll eventually become. So when the Korax approached me, I listened.
She had intended to make me feel better. But her words stung my heart. You never thought of me as just me. I was only an enemy waiting to happen.
It wasn't like that. I told the Korax where we'd be traveling, and when, but nothing more. They only wanted something retrieved from your home. I wrote the letter to your father, accepting the marriage arrangement so that he would allow you to return. They swore not to harm you.
They didn't make that same promise about Darrow. My knife lifted. Where is he? Gabe cut between us.
Don't answer her, Celia. Tanger's orders.
Celia, where is Darrow?
She had forgotten how to speak, apparently, and I was running out of time. If she knew anything, I had to make her tell me. Her mouth clamped shut, and it was a call on my bluff.
I lowered the knife, handing it over to Gabe. You continue to betray me.
I might be difficult, but at least I'm loyal. I was your friend, Celia. You never were mine. She called my name as I turned away, but I didn't look back. There was no point in it. She had betrayed a Dallasaur girl who no longer existed, which meant from now on, she was nothing to me.
Chapter 41. Simon. Tengger and I made it into Sylvan just in time to observe Kestra's confrontation with Celia. As he helped me from the cart, he asked,
"Is she always like this?"
My grin widened. "Actually, she's quieter than usual today." Tengger's stare shifted to me, heavy enough that I felt it. When I turned, he said,
"I didn't think it would happen to you, Hatch. Not with a Dallasaur."
"That what would happen?"
"You're compromised. You have feelings for that girl."
There was no point in denying it. A blind man would have detected a connection between us. "I'm not compromised, Captain. I still believe in the plan."
"Believe in the plan from a distance. After tonight, you'll be reassigned."
I'd known this was coming, but hadn't decided what to do about it. Disobedience meant expulsion from the Korax. But if I left Kestra now, they'd swallow her whole. My only choice was to make her tell Tengger where she had hidden the dagger. And then maybe, if I was lucky, I could persuade Tengger to let me find Gerald and retrieve it. Hopefully before Endrick got to him. Once it became clear that Kestra wasn't going to harm Celia, Tengger muttered that Celia had probably deserved worse, and told me to bring Kestra to meet with him under the bookshop. I wasn't sure what Kestra had said, but Celia was still standing when Kestra and Gabe walked away, so I took that as a good sign. Celia remained exactly where Kestra had left her, ashen-faced and frozen in place, which Kestra couldn't have seen, but I was sure she could sense it. She reached my side and smiled. "I feel better. We need to talk, alone." Her smile fell, and she cast a cautious eye at Gabe. He'd obviously been assigned to monitor us because he stayed on our heels, entering the same bookshop where Tengger had gone. The owner wasn't Korak, but he was sympathetic to our cause and could be trusted. "Korak tunnels run beneath most of Sylvan," I explained to Kestra. "This bookshop accesses a secret room downstairs."
"Below a bookshop?" she coolly replied. "I didn't know Korax could read."
"We can read, or most of us can. Careful with the insults, Kes. I'm a Korak, too."
"Yes, you are."
She stopped, and this time her eyes turned on me like a whip. "And I am not." Maybe she could be, if she'd just tell the truth about the dagger. It was a secret she was willfully keeping because no matter what her feelings were for Simon Hatch, the boy, she still did not trust Simon the Korak. I glanced at Gabe, who was standing closer to us than he needed to be. "Give us a minute alone."
"I'm supposed to bring you directly to Tengger?"
I cocked my head. "Tell him I overpowered you on the way inside. There was nothing you could do to stop me." Gabe chuckled.
"Not even on your best day, Hatch."
But he did leave. When he'd gone, I led Kestra down a row of thick books that reminded me of the hedge path where Basil had spoken to her last night. From the spark in Kestra's eyes, she might have been drawing the same comparison. I wondered again what had happened between her and Basil. Was that something else standing between us? She folded her arms against a rigid body, displaying stubbornness at the worst possible time. Tengger had led the Korax for the 7 years of our existence. Time after time, we had outsmarted the Dominion, outmatched forces with 20 times our numbers, and survived despite being targeted for annihilation. Credit for all of that went to the captain.
Kestra would not win at this meeting. "We don't have much time," I began. "You said you have a plan for the Oldenblade. I want to hear it." "What I said is that the plan is my secret, and it will stay that way until Darrow is returned to me." She was maddening. Deliberately so. "You trusted Gerald with the plan, but not me? Gerald only knows what little I had to tell him, such as where to hide the most valuable weapon in Antora." "Hush!" She shifted her weight to the other foot, clearly irritated. "If you knew my plan, what would you do?" "I would tell Tengger so we could find Gerald and get that dagger back." Before she could object, I added, "The Dominion will already be after Gerald for escaping the dungeons, and now he's carrying the one object Endrick desires most. That's your doing, Kes." She licked her lips and looked away. This was clearly something she had not considered. "Talk to me." I was almost begging now. Any infidant is better than losing the dagger again. "Now who's naive?" she asked. "Do you think everyone who might claim the blade is the same quality warrior? If we want to see Endrick defeated, the infidant must be the strongest possible choice." "But it's not your choice. The dagger will choose who it wants, no matter who tries to claim it." "What if it's Tengger?" "If it is, I'll support him. I don't always agree with his methods, but the Dominion fights in the mud. If we intend to fight back, we have to get dirty." The muscles on her face tightened. Through gritted teeth, she said, "That's why Darrow should bear the blade. He won't compromise right and wrong to win." What a convenient answer that was, to have the luxury of cheering for a battle from the sidelines. "Tell me this much. Do you know where Gerald is now?" A beat passed. "I can't tell you that." "Are you sure he can keep the blade safe? Are you sure Tengger could?" Another minute of this and my brain would split apart. I took a deep breath. It didn't help. "If Tengger agrees to release Darrow, can you get the Oldenblade back again?" Her eyes softened. "Stop asking questions you know I won't answer. Don't make me keep refusing you, Kes. A few nights ago, Tengger threatened me. Now it's my turn. If Darrow isn't released tonight, there will be no infidant. I'll disappear by morning and take my secrets with me. If you disappear tonight, it's because Tengger doesn't accept threats. You must know what he will do to you. Then he'll lose any chance to get the blade." Gabe poked his head around the corner. "Time to go." Kestra started forward, but he put out an arm to block her. "You made it hard for me to eavesdrop, Miss Dalasor, but I have some idea of what's going on. You should know that Koraks never play fair. Our only chance at winning is to cheat, and Tengger is a master at it." She only stared forward until he gave up and told us to follow him downstairs. With my injured ribs and a pit in my stomach the size of a boulder, I lagged behind. By the time I got there, Kestra was seated at a large table across from Tengger and Trina. Gabe stood against the wall and caught my eye, subtly gesturing to the lever blade at his side. Tengger must have just given it to him. Surely Kestra noticed it too. Once I took my seat, a meal was brought in, some flatbread and boiled rabbit and a sheep's milk cheese made in Sylvan. As was always true for us, the food was simple, nothing to draw any attention to itself, but I dug into the food with enthusiasm. Kestra was eating too, though with measured bites. She wouldn't give Tengger an edge by letting him think she needed anything. We weren't far into the meal when Tengger reached beneath the table with the hand that wore the grip glove and put the fake dagger on the table. He was sending Kestra two strong messages. This dagger could be touched, and there would be consequences if she couldn't explain where the real dagger was. The first bead of sweat broke out on my brow.
"I'm curious," Tengger began. "How did you know this was the Oldenblade when you found it?"
I set down my fork. One sentence into the meal and Tengger had already killed my appetite. Kestra mostly ignored the captain. She took a forkful of food, as she said. "After 17 years, any other blade would have rusted in that pit."
"True, if this one had been down there that long. But what if this had only been in that mud for a few minutes?"
Kestra remained calm, though I caught the flutter of her lashes. "I know why you're suspicious. You expected it to light up for you, or whatever fool you hoped would become the infidant. Since it didn't, you accused me of tricking you." Tengger's smile darkened. I'd seen this expression on his face before, and it wasn't good.
"Perhaps you can explain this."
Tengger turned the blade over and pointed to the handle.
"The name Dalasaur is carved here, in very small print. A person could miss it if they were not studying every detail of the blade as intently as I did."
Kestra didn't blink, though it was obvious she had made a serious error. If Risha chose to honor her captors, who are we to question it? Tengger threw the dagger into the corner of the room, letting it clatter onto the ground.
"Where is the Olden Blade?"
It was a demand, not a question. She responded just as fiercely, "Where is Darrow?" "If she knew about the blade, I'm sure she would tell us," I said meaningfully. When her only response was to take another bite of food, I added, "Kestra and I searched Risha's cell together. It wasn't there."
"Then you looked in the wrong place!"
Tengger turned to Kestra.
"You must go back to Woodcourt and search until it's found."
Now she dropped her fork. "You can't be serious. After all I've done, all you forced me to do, you know very well I can never return there."
"You're a Dalasaur. They'll take you in before admitting that one of their own blood could betray them."
"That's the whole point," I began. She quickly interrupted. "The point is that even if they do accept me, I was supposed to marry tonight. If I go home, those plans will immediately resume. I won't be at Woodcourt long enough to find the blade."
"What are your choices?" Tengger asked. "You have no means to survive on your own, and no Entorin will accept you. I'm your only protection, and to get it, you'll do as I say."
She arched her neck in defiance. "Or I'll leave Entora." Trina snorted.
"What country would take you in, risking Endric's wrath?"
"No one would. Not for any price. Kestra knew this better than anyone." But she didn't show it. Her brow was knit in concentration, as if trying to control her temper. "Wherever I go, it won't be in service to the Korax."
"Then you failed to deliver on your agreement."
Tengger stood so quickly, his chair fell to the floor behind him. His right hand widened, a quick test of the grip glove.
"You know what that means."
I knew. It would start with the grip glove, and an absence of mercy. It would end with her death, or Darrow's. That explained Gabe's lever blade. Beneath the table, my hand quietly shifted to my sword. Even if I had the strength to swing it, I still couldn't use it against my captain and friends. Nor could I let them harm Kestra. My heart pounded against what was left of my ribs, leaving my chest throbbing with pain. "Kill me, and you'll lose your last chance to find the Olden Blade." Kestra raised her voice. "Heed my demands, and you might yet see it." Tengger's tone darkened, and he made a gesture toward Gabe, silently ordering him to pull out his weapon.
"Heed your demands? No, my lady."
"If you want the dagger, you will not threaten me."
"This is no idle threat, Kestra. This is real."
Tengger flicked his eyes, and Gabe stepped forward, the sharp tip of the lever blade facing her. Tengger would say it was a shame, that he had given her the chance to save herself, that he'd had no other choice. He would say she was a necessary sacrifice. He would give the order. I had to stop it. "She didn't fail." I refused to look over at Kestra as I spoke. "She's hidden the Olden Blade, out of reach of the Dalasaurs, and out of our reach if we harm her. Kestra knows where it is. Only she knows." Everyone turned to Kestra for a response, except me. From the corner of my eye, I saw her hand on the table, clenching and unclenching.
"Is this true?"
The fact that Tengger wasn't screaming was proof of miracles. Kestra wasn't answering, and even if she tried, it'd likely be laced with curses at me. "Let her be angry. I just saved her life." Tengger quickly lost patience with her silence. With a snap of his fingers, Gabe disappeared through a different door in the room and returned a moment later half-carrying Darrow, who could not have stood otherwise. I gasped when I saw him. His cheeks were sunken in, and his eyes, which bore evidence of laugh lines, had hollowed out. The wound had torn free from its cauterization and was covered in a bandage that had bled through. Why had they let him get this bad? Any respect Kestra might have had for the Korax would be lost now.
"Kestra,"
Dara tried to say something more, but no sound escaped his lips. I doubted he had enough strength for it. Her face tense with worry, Kestra started to get up. But I pulled her back into her chair, whispering, "Don't make this worse." "You'd know all about making things worse," she snapped. Yet she remained in her seat, her eyes seeing nothing through her anger but Darrow. A third person came through the door. Our physician. Lowell had been with the Korax since long before my time, and I knew almost nothing about her, except that if you could get to her alive, no matter what condition you were in, she could probably heal you. Trina once told me that Lowell had some Endrian medicines, miraculous treatments that made cauterization powder seem like roadside dust. Now I wondered why she had these treatments. What if Kestra was not the only Endrian to have survived Endric's wrath?
"This is Lowell," Tengra said to Kestra. "She's kept your servant alive until now, but what I order her to do next is entirely up to you. In Lowell's hand is the medicine Darrow needs to survive. If he gets it, by morning, he will be healed and returned to your service, as promised. In Gabe's hand is a lever blade, capable of stopping Darrow's pain in an entirely different way. Who would you have me give orders to?"
Darrow shook his head at Kestra and mumbled,
"Let me go. Don't trust them." "Where is the Olden Blade?" Tengger asked. "Tell me before the count of three, or trust me. Darrow's fate will be decided. One,
heal him first, please.
Two,
don't do this."
Tengger lifted his hand and pointed to Gabe, giving him the order.
"You've disappointed me, my lady. Even worse, you disappointed Darrow here."
"I have disappointed him, but for different reasons than you think." Beneath the table, Kestra had already raised the skirts on one leg. She reached down and I heard the quiet snap of her garter against her thigh. Inwardly, I groaned. I'd forgotten about that. She lifted an object, wrapped in a thin cloth, and set it on the table, unfolding the cloth enough to let everyone see what it was. "The Olden Blade is here."
Chapter 42. Kestra. Everyone rose to their feet upon seeing the Olden Blade. It seemed a moment frozen in time, with no movement from anyone, other than turning to Tengger for further orders. I remained in my seat, drawing the rewrapped dagger closer to my body, preventing anyone from trying to take it. If I could touch it without being burned, I'd gladly introduce them to its point.
"Enough,"
Tengger finally whispered, keeping his eye on the blade.
"Take your seats, all of you."
I was still in my chair, but I was the only one. Gradually, everyone else returned to where they had been before, with one exception. Simon. When everyone else sat, he merely walked out the door, back up the stairs from where we had entered. I called his name, but the door had shut behind him. It was clear he wasn't coming back. Well, maybe he shouldn't have revealed to Tengger that I knew where the blade was. Tengger had been bluffing with the lever blade before, or maybe he hadn't. Either way, Simon should have trusted me with my lie. And maybe I should have trusted him with the truth. For as far as he and I had come, nothing between us was so different from that night he attacked my carriage. He was a Korak. I was his enemy. How long? Trina's teeth were gritted together so tightly that I barely understood her. How long have you had it? I found it a few hours before we left Woodcourt, right before I was confined to my room. That's why you gave me the trousers to wear. You needed a dress. That's why a lot of things, Trina.
You will give me that dagger, Tengger said.
First, you will give Darrow his medicine. When Tengger hesitated, I added, you'll take the dagger from me anyway, so you have nothing to lose. But I do. Give him the medicine, I'll give you the weapon, and then you will all leave the room and let me talk to Darrow alone. Tengger considered my offer with a raised brow, entertained by my boldness. After a long silence in which I was sure he would refuse me, he finally nodded permission at Lowell, who poured the vial of medicine into Darrow's mouth. I hoped what Tengger had said before was true, that this would heal Darrow by morning.
Getting him back alive had always been most important. I had to remember that.
Now the old